guys, it's Ashers
and Petto,
and we are here with our brand new show, People Who Make Stuff. This is actually the first official episode that we've gotten to do with People Who Make Stuff, and I'm excited to talk to people that, you know, make stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the cherry breaker.
I'm excited about it. No, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got tons of people that want to come on, but we're definitely, like Pat said, breaking the cherry here with Mr. Drew Schmidt.
And Drew Schmidt has his BA in studio art, emphasis in everything but painting because it's too slow for his brain, and a minor in graphic communication and design. He has worked as the lead sculptor slash designer and production manager for a theming company for over 10 years till recently becoming a stay-at-home dad with his three daughters. He fills his free time doing ads and social media marketing for the Portage Family Skate Park in Portage, Wisconsin, as their senior art director, making shirt designs with his side hustle on Instagram and Facebook, creating logos and websites for local companies, and doing custom orders as they come in. And he also is a substitute teacher for the Lodi School District a few times a month. He's always been a creative guy, enjoys the process of creating more than the finished product, as we all do. And he's gracious enough to sit down with us for tonight's episode. So, Drew, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Right. So Drew came on our radar. Ashley, you could probably tell that story better than me, but he came on my radar.
Yeah, he came on my radar because Drew has this very interesting concept. And, you know, as most of you, I'm sure, know, I'm weird and I do weird stuff. And he actually sent me a message because he is working on a cryptid board game. And, you know, of course, I don't exactly know how Drew and I connected via social media, but, you know, we did. And that's a very interesting concept, you know, especially with cryptozoology kind of becoming a kind of growing in popularity nowadays, you know, kind of, you know, getting put out there more into the mainstream. Drew, do you want to tell us a little bit more about your game?
Yeah, like you said, it's gaining popularity. You know, there's always been this everyone loving Bigfoot, you know, or Nessie or what have you, you know. And there's this, like a group out there that they just love all different types. And I kind of researched it a little bit, kind of went down that rabbit hole. And then I found all sorts of different things I've never heard of before. Some Japanese things or like little gremlins and things like that. So I'm like, well, wouldn't this be kind of fun to turn into a game, because, you know, I'm going to be sitting home during this whole pandemic thing. Why don't I just have some fun with it? My girls love playing games, you know, board games, if they can sit still long enough.
Sure.
So, you know, I thought, why not make something? So I just love making it. It's kind of a spinoff of Catan a little bit, because I enjoy that game. You know, it's got like hex tiles, and you actually build the game field as you go, or you can set it up ahead of time. You know, there's a few rules here and there, but basically you can be a cryptid, you can be Bigfoot, or you can be like a tracker or someone trying to capture that cryptid or capture the evidence of. And you know, it's like a two-player game, and it's like back and forth, kind of like a tag or capture the flag type of thing. The goal is just to reach the other end of the board without getting caught or, you know, losing your way.
Sure.
And the cryptids that you can be, just for our audience, because I'm sure there's a lot of them that will know every single one on this list.
Yeah.
Bigfoot, Flatwoods Monster, Chupacabra, Hopkinsville Goblins, and the Rake, which I thought was super interesting because I never even knew about what the Rake was until we had Tony on, who's a filmmaker from Chicago that actually made a movie about the Rake. As well as werewolves, aliens, Slenderman, Jackalope. And then I saw you did a water version, which I don't know if the stuff from that was in the PDF that you sent me.
But it should have been
Kraken, Mermaid. Yeah, I remember seeing the Kraken one. Sea Dragon, Mermaid, Kraken, Sharkman, Nessie, Megalodon, USO, which is very cool to include. And of course, everyone's favorite, Cthulhu. So those are the characters that you can play in this game.
Yep. I started out by making them in 3D, actually, like sculpting them in the computer. And I was going to 3D print them as pieces for the game. But just to try to get it out there and beta test this thing, I just did a PDF version to get it out in as many hands as I could, just to see if it's even a decent game to pursue.
Sure.
Well, that's what's so interesting to me about the world of DIY gaming, which is something that I think a lot of people don't stop and consider actually existing in the first place, let alone how easy it is to kind of tap into, create, and then distribute your own games. We're so used to like going on the shelf and taking down like Scrabble or Monopoly, something that has a very specific board, something that has very specific tokens and cards associated with it. And that's how you play a game. But anybody that's kind of into like tabletop role playing, Dungeons and Dragons, Vampire the Masquerade, Shadowrun, stuff like that, knows that, you know, there's a lot of games that you can play with just kind of a rule book. And you go from there. And using the PDF technology, which we make it, that makes it sound like I'm talking about rocket science, but really with a PDF, you can give people literally everything they need to play a game without having to, you know, hard copy mail anything or package anything, right? I mean, the PDF that you sent us was extremely well designed. And really is pretty much all ready to go.
Yeah, I just didn't. I neglected to include the cutout dice, but you know, whatever. I can send that to you later. you know, or you probably have some dice laying around, just a standard 6-sided die, two of them.
Of course, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's yeah.
Not even an integral part of it. You know what right. I'm saying? That's just for like a decision making within the game. Mm. You know, you could flip a coin.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to me. And this is like a space that I'm just kind of starting to see more of as I get more into like the role playing community and stuff. And I have a couple of games that I stream online for people on Twitch and stuff, or not necessarily Twitch, but you know that whole thing. And it's really easy if you're a storyteller and you like games. You know, you can sit down and kind of just make your own game up and come up with your own rules and your own, you know, characters and objectives and stuff like that. And I mean, the Cryptic game that you put together, it's pretty solid. You know, I was really impressed by it.
Well, thank you. You know, I had a back and forth with it for a few months, you know, but most of the work was done making the pieces, you know what I'm saying? Making right. it look nice. Cause that's my background. Like, okay, yeah, we'll go play a game at the end of this, but, I want to make sure that it looks nice while you're playing it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, I think that the Cryptid game is going to be a big appeal to a lot of the listeners. I'm assuming you're still looking for more beta testers. Is that correct?
Yeah. And also on my website, I have a few other games too that you can check out. You know, three or four other ones, but you know, they're not as, I don't think as, involved. That's kind of a strange word. Like in depth or as has some like characters or is, you know, many colors or ideas placed within the game. This is probably my more ambitious attempt.
Sure. Yeah,
definitely. Well, you know, sometimes you sit down and you want to play a half an hour game. And sometimes you want to play a game that lasts 3 hours. You know, there's a difference between Chutes and Ladders and Monopoly, right? You know, Candyland or Chutes and Ladders or something, you can knock out a game.
It'll change every time too, you know, depending on how you set up the board,
right?
You know, or where you put your obstacles. Like you can put a tree in the way and then there that you can't walk there because there's a tree, you know, right. Or if there's a rock or whatever, you know, dig into it deeper when you check out the game. But there's just a couple of rules saying it can't be any thinner than 2 hex tiles wide, otherwise, you know, free for all, you know, make print out as many as you want. Make it your whole bedroom. I don't care. Have, you know,
one time we had a drunk night and we played Monopoly and the person that won was the guy that was sitting in the corner that was high as fuck on Xanax that couldn't even keep his eyes open. I swear to God, beat us all at fucking Monopoly.
What was his strategy? Was it buy everything or just do nothing?
No, he just pretty much did nothing, and he won. So that's how you win Monopoly, guys. Just take a lot of Xanax and play, and you'll be all right.
That's how you win at life in general, I think.
So that's my background in tabletop gaming.
Very cool.
But anyway, Drew, you do a lot of stuff though, right? I mean, you're not just making games; you're making all kinds of things, correct?
Correct. Right. Yeah, I get bored easy. I can't sit around and do nothing.
What was kind of your first venture into any of this? I mean, how did you know that this was even something that you were interested in?
As in, like, a game making, or
just creating in general? Yeah, just being an artist in general.
Well, I kind of grew up with it. My uncle was a graphic designer for JanSport for their T-shirt line before they got sold out and bought by VF Corporation. And I think North Face and Eastpak stuff own them now, but irrelevant. Artist. He's always been a graphic designer. He taught me how to airbrush when I was like six. He helped me build a bunch of Pinewood Derby cars for when I was in the Cub Scouts. You know, I had a shark car, a rocket car, a spaceship, like a UFO car with a bunch of little baby aliens inside that when it hit the end, they'd spill out, and it was great. You know, I didn't win anything, but it was fun. You know,
me and my son did the shark car this year for the Pinewood Derby.
Yeah, it's just great fun.
Yeah.
And that got me into it. Like I stated, the process is what's fun. I'm going to make this thing. Okay. Yeah. And then you get this thing at the end. All right. Well, let's look at it. You know, I don't think that's very fun. Put it on the shelf, you know.
I'm
trying to figure things out as I go. One of my professors once stated that you have to be comfortable not knowing what you're doing. And that's exactly where I am. Take this interview right now, for instance. I have no idea what's going on.
Well, hey, neither do we. It's all right.
But yeah, you know, to arc back, art has always been a big part of my life. I don't know. Back in the day, they'd always have like these ads on TV, like, you too can be an artist. And then you call into this place and you get this art test and you send it in. And I did multiples of those, and they're like, yeah, you need to join this art school. I'm like, well, you just said I'm great, so why do I have to join your school? Well, I was 10, you know.
Checkmate, yeah.
So, you know, I would do a bunch of, like, you know, copies of comics in the newspaper and things like that. And, you know, I'd pick up girls at recess in elementary school by drawing their portraits, or, you know, drawing, like, Tigger or something, you know, whatever was relevant at the time.
Sure.
You know. Just a conversation piece, because I was really, really shy. And it was kind of, you know, it was an icebreaker, you know, just like, hey, I drew this. Kind of like Napoleon, you know, Napoleon Dynamite. I worked so long on that lip. That was basically me. art's always been a big part. And it's always been drawing until I took a bunch of, like, 3D design classes. And then I really got into sculpture. In high school, I was like, yeah, let's take welding, because maybe I want to build a sculpture at some point and I'm going to need to weld it together. So I just took the basics, and I ended up getting an award for the best welder in the school and headhunted by all these welding companies. I'm like, no, dude, wait, whoa. I just wanted to know how to tack this thing together so I can make a piece of art. You know, that was my mindset. Like, I was thinking that was going to be my career, welding, you know, pipes together for a living. I want to make some stuff. Like, that's where my passion is, just making stuff. And then, you know, pursuing graphic design as well. I'm kind of rambling here, but you can cut me off whenever you need.
No, that's okay. Well, I mean, when it comes with the age, right? I mean, you're a millennial, right? So you kind of grew up with the advancements in technology and therefore the advancements in art. So I'm assuming that kind of as things became popular, that's kind of where you started picking things up and putting other things down.
I'll have to throw a Napster out there. Download of Adobe product back in the day. You know, back when it was okay to do that. I wasn't selling it, I was just learning it. And I have all the Adobe products now because I learned all by myself. And then when I finally got to college level, it was like, well, you already know this. How about you teach the class? So I had a couple of, you know, classes that I helped instruct and set up the intro students projects and things like that. So I just felt really accomplished that way. And, you know, some people say, oh, I have a graphic design major or minor. I have a graphic communication and design. So that means I can do typography, like how the words lay out, just make it look good, as opposed to just making like an icon or something like that. You know, communications is kind of a broad thing too for publications. Sure. and spreads and layouts and things like that. But, you know, I like to dabble. I don't like to put all my eggs in one basket or whatever you want to say, pigeonhole myself. And that's really what got me into working for the theming department, in the Dells. I'm not, I can say any more than that. But yeah, it was a real good time. I got to be an artist and got paid for it and do a bunch of sculptures.
Can we not talk about the Dells? When you say that's all I'm going to say about it, like that's all you're really going to say about it? Because before the show, we had a very long, not very long, but we had a conversation about your work in the Wisconsin Dells, which as someone that grew up in Chicago was like our premier vacation destination growing up. And it still is kind of to this day. I mean, COVID stuff aside, last year, it's still alive and kicking. But you don't want to get into the Dell stuff?
Not specifically where I worked, but the Dell.
Oh, race. Okay.
We had a falling out. They let me go.
Okay.
Let's just say, like, if you're a frequenter of the Dells, you'd be familiar with the institution that
there are a lot of elephants I've made. I can say that.
Okay, all right. We'll keep it at that. That's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to go anywhere.
Hundreds, hundreds of elephants, different types of medium.
But going back to something that you said earlier, which I completely identify with, is that I'm somebody that I have no graphic design ability whatsoever. I've made short films in my past, so I'm kind of a visual artist, I guess, in that respect. But as far as like drawing and shit, I cannot draw at all. I'm terrible at it, and I'm terrible at graphic design, like making logos and flyers and stuff. The flyers that I used to make when I was in bands in high school were like, I'd steal my mom's magazines and then cut shit out and then like layer it on top of each other, which I know is like basically how Photoshop works.
That's the aesthetic now.
Right. But I like that, like you said, aesthetic. Exactly. I like that aesthetic. I liked the way that looked when you all kind of layered it and then copied it and it looked that way. That was the aesthetic that I could deal in, is that. But that's kind of, right.
That's what I was going to say. Real ransom noting.
Yeah, but like punk rock flyer ransom notes. But yeah, like, so that was the extent of my flyer making ability. And now I have, I always hit people up to make posters or flyers or shit. But yeah, one thing I never had, but I wrote a lot. And I like to make short films and stuff, but you know, there's so much stuff that I've made that the second it was done, I like put it in a pile with everything else that I've done and just moved on to the next thing.
Right.
And never thought about really honestly putting forth effort to make it try to find an audience, because I don't care about that. You know what I mean? I don't do it for the applause or the validation. I do it because I like the process so much, and I like writing a story. I don't care about selling the story, and I don't even care if a bunch of people ever read the story or not. You know, I like writing it for my own. I do NaNoWriMo every year. I don't know if you know what that is. National Novel Writing Month. It's in November. But it's basically you try to write like a 50,000 word novel over the course of November. And it's basically you got to write like 2,000 words a day. Which isn't really that hard if you're like super into writing. It's just, you know, you sit down for like an hour and a half every day and you write. And I've done that several years now, and none of that has ever seen the light of day. Like, I'll let people read it if you want to, but I've never tried to find a publisher or even publish it independently. And it's because I just don't care to. And it's amazing. Like, it like blows my wife's mind that I spend that much time and effort on this stuff, and then kind of like in essence, like throw it away. You know what I mean? And art, what's kind of
for the artist, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's the process of creation that's rewarding. It's not the applause. I don't give a and it's also like not the validation of somebody saying that what you just did was good. I don't need someone to fucking tell me that I'm talented. I know I'm talented. I think I'm talented. It's not even about talent. It's about like you just like making what you like making. And but I think it's interesting that you equate it to and I don't know if you were joking, but it's like having ADD. Like you just do it to occupy your mind. Yeah. And I never thought of it like that before, but I think there's some honest to God truth in that, you know?
Yeah, some people pick up a guitar and start noodling around on it, you know? Like I've been in a bunch of bands in the past, and that was an outlet there, and I just didn't realize that art and music is the same type of thing. It's a creative process that at the end you have a thing that and you move on to the next. You know, it's the same.
What instrument did you play?
Guitar, bass, drums. You know, trumpet, you name it.
Dude, I got a trumpet for I got a trumpet for Christmas this year because I was turning 40 and going through my midlife crisis of I want to start a ska band. And I'll
join you.
Dude, I cannot play the fucking trumpet. I don't have the mouth for it.
I'm sure.
It's whatever you need to be able to do with your lips to play the trumpet. My lips don't do that.
Years of practice doing it.
Yeah, I thought I was going to. Well, because I play the bass, and because I played the bass for so long, like I can pick up a guitar. I have an acoustic guitar, and I can play power chords and like kind of fuck around with it. And because I know like the chord structure and stuff, you know, I can sit down at a piano and be like, okay, where's E? All right. And I can play like You Shook Me All Night Long on the piano and stuff. Like, you know, because it's all kind of relative. But then, I just kind of thought the trumpet was going to be in the same vein. Like, okay, here's a trumpet. Just pick it up and play it. And I'm like, I've listened to enough, you know, Operation Ivy or fucking Real Big Fish. I could figure this out. And no, I probably should have gotten a saxophone. I think I would have done better.
Saxophone is a lot harder. You have a reed to deal with.
But that's what I think would have done better is because I think with my mouth, because I don't make any noise with the trumpet. It goes... Because whatever you're supposed to be doing with your lips, my lips don't do that.
Loosen it up, man. Loosen it up.
I don't know. My kid can do it. He picks it up. He plays the trumpet better than me.
Yeah, right.
Fucker's 10 years old. But, like, yeah. So that's crazy. So what made you – so I get the guitar, drums, and bass thing. But what made you go with the trumpet?
That was just, like, in elementary school. Like, oh, you want to be in band? You have to
– Oh, okay.
My dad played trumpet in his high school band. I don't know. My parents got divorced when I was like 7. So it was always a competition of who I wanted to impress more, you know, type of thing.
Okay.
And yeah, you know, my mom was way more supportive than my dad in the end. So I gave it up and bass was my instrument of choice. I have a Steinberger headless, if that means anything. There's a bunch of YouTube videos of me in high school, winning talent shows and things like that. But
do you use a pick or your fingers?
Rock star and then you move on, you know, I'm done with it type of thing. I met that objective, if you want to say, you know.
Did you play bass with a pick or your fingers?
Pick.
Good.
A number bass 9.
Bass players that use their fingers should have them broken.
Well, you can slap bass.
Ah, fuck you.
Let's play cool. Come on, you can do it.
Oh, of course. You got to be like you got to be like 40, right? Or like
I'm 35, a little under. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, cuz you're fucking Primus. I was more of a Geddy Lee fan. I was more of a Rush guy. I mean, honestly, or like Rancid. Like I grew up listening to punk, sure. So I honestly was more of a metalhead in the grammar school, but metal was like really hard to play. So like when you're in all those early bands like in high school and stuff, you can't like rock out one in the garage with your buddies or like fucking, you know what I mean? Like Cowboys from Hell. Like that shit's like crazy hard. Yeah. So, but you could play Operation Ivy or you could play Green Day or you could play, the Misfits. Yeah. The Misfits or something. It's like, okay.
The Clash is where we started. Yeah.
Okay. You know, yeah. Janie Jones.
Bunch of cover bands. You know, Nirvana for sure was really big. You know, I was in a band and we did was the Unplugged album. That's all we did. Like,
yeah,
I sang it poorly, but played. but we got pizza out of the deal, you know?
Oh, yeah, nice. I'm sold.
Molly's lips and territorial pissings were the only two that, and I'm those were many years apart, but the bands that I was in, we didn't do a ton of Nirvana covers, but, you know, now it's interesting now that I quit playing for about 10 years. I used to DJ for a while too. That's like the other thing that musicians do when they get old is they either join a cover band or they DJ. Stop it. And,
I'd DJ love to be in a band again, but yeah.
So here, interesting enough, here's how I got back into it. My kid goes to school and they have, it's like a religious school, like a private school. And they have, like a Sunday, one of the Sunday services is, it's like contemporary. There's a Christian rock band. And I started out doing the AV for them. And then started playing bass with them for a while. It was the first time I was on stage in like literally like 10 fucking years. And it's 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm sober, more sober than I've ever been with a guitar in my hand in my entire fucking life in front of 200 people. Like I would play drunk off my ass for 35 people on a Tuesday night. Right. And like that, and that was like the high point of my music career before now. Now it's like, yeah, I'm in a Christian rock band and it's kind of whatever. But like at the same time, there's tons of people here. I'm playing the best that I've ever played. And, you know, it's before noon on a Sunday. It was crazy.
Well, my first band I was in was, ironically enough, I was 8 years old and it was to the guy down the street. You know, he played drums, I played bass, and that's how you start a band. You know, we're called Spoon Fed, and then we changed it to Xerio 7, and then he graduated.
Like changed it to what?
Well, Xerio 7.
And what's that?
That's just the name of the band. I don't know. Right. He picked the name. I like Spoon Fed better, personally. But.
Yeah, cool. Drums and bass.
All right? Let's prime it. For Jesus. Play the key of G, right? For Jesus.
Yeah. So, Ashley, we've alienated you enough. What do you got?
I'm not an artist at all. I'm not creating.
This is art.
No, I'm really not, guys. Everybody says that I am. No, I'm really not. I'm just a nerd.
Well, now that I know that your hair color is fake, I'd say that's pretty artistic.
Well, okay, that's fair. I mean, a tiny little sliver of my background. I dated a very famous person for a very long time, and I learned some things. Kind of, he was a special effects makeup artist, but he did a lot of other stuff too. And he you know did the music thing and you know movies and all that fun stuff. So I mean, I've learned a thing or two. But like, oh my gosh, guys, if you ever saw me like draw a stick person, you'd be fucking offended. Like you'd be so mad. And don't ask me to sing because it won't go over very well. But
you know, the title of this podcast is People Who Make Stuff. So yeah. It's like with between like, you know, stuff. All the content that you create in the cryptid community, like that's stuff.
I do make things. I wouldn't say that artistically, but I do make things. Yes.
Well, anytime you make a choice, I feel like that's art, right? Like anytime. Because that's all art is choices. Oh, do I draw it like this or do I draw it like that? Do I do a point of view shot or do I film it from the back? You know what I mean? How do I tell the story? What character's point of view? What voice? You know, what's the plot going to be? What's going to happen? Based on
previous decisions, yes, that you've learned from.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm the master of dark arts. I don't know if that counts.
Nice. At
all. That's nice. Good.
I'm just kidding. That was a terrible joke. No, I'm just listening. I don't have much to contribute. I never played in bands or made music or made things. But I guess that's kind of why, you know, I'm personally fascinated with people that can do those things. You know, some people, I run with a lot of artists, right? I mean, most of my friends are crafty or, you know, they're, you know, musically inclined or, you know, whatever. All of them have some type of talent. It's amazing. I guess my curiosity is always kind of, you know, how it gets started. I mean, I mean, some people, everything they touch turns to gold, right? Drew sounds like he's one of those people and that's amazing. But you know, some people, it sounds like it takes a lot of practice and you have to get into it. I've always heard that like drawing is actually a skill set. It's not so much a talent. It's something that you have to kind of continue to perfect over the years.
Anybody can draw.
But that's what I hear. I hear anybody can draw. But like I said, if you saw my stick people, you'd be like, maybe I'm just not going to draw stick people. And I don't know.
Your stick person is any better than any other stick person. The word better should not even come into that equation, right? It's your stick person, and it's purely objective.
That's true. I guess that's a good point. That's a good point. Art is very subjective. That's a good point. But so that's how I feel about art and things. I think it's beautiful, though. I do. I think it is amazing that people find these skills that they love doing. And essentially, well, I mean, obviously, like Drew, you've made a career out of it. However, it sounds like most of the stuff that you do is just kind of for the hell of it, kind of because it's fun for you, right? I mean, you just do exactly. it because you like to do it. And
amazing. I fell into that job for 10 years. You know, this is college, but they're paying me. Something wrong here.
right. Well, you know, and I mean, it's kind of worked out. But nowadays, you know, instead of, you know, doing the art thing, you've chosen to take up the family man role. How's that shift kind of worked out for you?
That's an art. That, you know,
yeah, everything is definitely an art.
You know, there's a saying we had: you're juggling wiener dogs and trying not to drop one.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. That's a shirt, by the way. you can buy that from me. And with blood. Yeah, it's great. You know, it's like any day you'll have a good day and a bad day, but there's also the saying that you can't, every day can't be good, but there's good in every day.
Yeah. Oh, look at that.
Yeah. Getting to your, right. You know, like that goes back to being a, you know, substitute teacher as well. You know, you got to.
What grade do you, I mean, I know it's whatever they call you for, but it's.
I tend to do K through three.
Okay.
I like the special ed kids too. They're great.
Awesome.
You know, that is right. So you do
I'm
that nowadays.
Kid, you know?
Oh gosh. What does that mean?
The labels that they have. Don't get me started on that.
Oh but. Man. So what, so do you, so you know, going forward, obviously, you know, kids tend to, you know, they grow up, right? I mean, we're always a parent forever. I mean, what are your plans for the future? Do you have goals? You have certain things that you're trying to accomplish going forward? I'm sure you do. I'd love to hear about them is what I'm saying. Yeah,
I'd love to have a full-time job, you know, that pays the bills and I can help contribute to the household. Because right now my wife she wears the pants in here and that's perfectly fine.
Sure.
And stay at home, work from home, virtual, remote, whatever you want to say. It's great. You know, it's working for us right now. We're breaking even, but if I were to put them in daycare, I would need a job that offsets that.
Yeah. It would. Yeah. You'd then be in the negative somehow. It's ridiculous, right?
It is ridiculous. And wear and tear on your vehicle.
Sure.
So actually, ironically enough, next week I have a trial week, quote unquote, to work for a company, a sign company down in Mount Horeb. That's easy to find out what their name is, but yeah, we're going to see how that works out, and hopefully we can work an agreement that I can make some art for them, yeah. And I can sustain my family. Like, you know,
sure.
I'd love to get my
sure.
kids more socialized with other kids. You know, daycare. After school programs, but you know, right now every day we just go to the park, and I put a note out, hey, we're heading to the park. Any moms with kids want to come play? You know, like,
oh yeah.
It just sounds really like a weird.
I'm sure. Yeah. It probably, well, and you know what? There's
Craigslist ad or something, you know?
Stay at home dads are very valid. Let's just say that right now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that happening. It just, whatever works for you, it works for you, right? I mean, that's okay. But I can understand how that could probably send the wrong message.
Now, when my son was born, I was working midnights. So, I'd have him during the day and, you know, I was working at night, but I mean, I would still have him during the day and we would do baby tumbling and shit. And I loved being the only dad there.
Oh no, Pat, don't take
with
it there.
A bunch of chicks that just shit out kids.
you stop preying on those moms.
The spider never caught any flies. Let me put it like that. But it didn't bother me.
You enjoyed the view, is what you're saying. I get it.
Oh yeah, we did. I mean, when my son was born, we'd take him to Hooters, and we'd be like, you know, me and my buddies would take him, and they'd be, oh, who's cute? Oh, that's mine. You know, But now Drew's got three girls, so I'm sure at that point you're just like, oh my god, I got all these kids around me.
Well, that's true. Yeah, the big difference is
that one is around here, right?
It doesn't matter, you know. In the end, like, they're going to be who they're going to be, you know.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
well, yeah, you're definitely seeing that with the oldest one now, because this is the all of our kids are like basically the same age. We all have like 9, 10-year-olds.
Yeah,
and like, yeah, this is when they start to become people. And they start to make choices, and the stuff that they're into, and the way that they express themselves, and the media that they consume, and the things that they like, and the things that they dislike. And it's interesting seeing how, like, they kind of begin to express themselves artistically, and how much of that they kind of have in them at this age, you know?
Right. She's the best artist in the class. I'm like, well, don't say that too loud. You're going to make the other kids feel bad. Like, you know, we're all equal here. We're learning together. Like, come on. Well,
so something that you said earlier that kind of it juxtaposed nicely with something that Ashley just said. Ashley, like, said she never had this drive to do this stuff, and she didn't get it, and whatever, you know, she never felt the need to make this stuff. And you had, I assume, joked, or maybe not, because it hit close to home with me, that the reason that you kind of began drawing was to express yourself to girls. And I wonder if, like, how much of that, because that's why I picked up a guitar. It was because girls thought
I would say dudes with
guitars were, yeah, like, that's and that's why Ashley's like, I don't know, I never felt the need to do this. Well, you were already a girl.
That makes sense.
Girls are impossible to impress. Like,
right.
Like, I had titties at 9, so I was always popular.
I mean, all you had to do was go in the mirror and pull, there you go. They're right there. You know, I had to learn how to play bass badly. Like, he had to learn how to draw.
Gotta be the best. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, in my high school yearbook, I was voted second best artist in the school.
And what's the first best doing right now? Obviously not being interviewed by this
fucking podcast. But he was fantastic, and I voted for him. Like,
yeah.
You know, you got to be humble. You know, you can't have a big head about this stuff.
Right. And I mean, I always felt as long as it worked for you, there was no reason to compete with somebody else. This isn't the Highlander. Like, there's room for all of us, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I mean, do you honestly feel that, like, your artistic ability, really, you self-developed it as a mechanism to communicate with people?
Absolutely. I was super shy. Going through a divorce, I didn't want to talk to anybody. I had, you know, there was a point where I had to get in front of a judge and decide who I wanted to live with for the rest of my life. Oh, you know?
Jesus Christ.
It just shut down. You know, it's like, my mom would ask me how my day went, you know, in elementary school, middle school, whatever. And it was, you know, mumble, whatever. She's like, okay, well, draw your day, please. Draw me what you did or what you learned. And I think that kind of was the spark too, you know, like, okay, this is my outlet. This is how I can talk, you know.
Drew, that is so insane that you tell that story. I have that same exact story. I was in counseling. One of my mom's friends got hit by a drunk driver and died when I was like in third grade. And it was like super true. I mean, it was a friend of the family. I'm not trying to downplay her importance in our life, but it was just kind of like the satellite person. And I freaked out in school like the week after it happened, because I think it all kind of just hit me that like I was never going to see this woman again. And the school that I was going to at the time, they had they had like a counselor that would come in and talk to like troubled kids and stuff. And they had asked me like, do you want to talk to, his name is Roger. Like, do you want to go talk to Roger? And I was like, sure. So I walked in and I told him what happened with my mom's friend dying. And he was like, well, why don't you write a letter to her? And I said, okay. And I wrote a letter, and it was like a goodbye letter. Like, oh, I'll never see you again, but you're in heaven now, so you're in a better place, and blah, blah. And then he was like, okay. He was like, well, why don't you write a letter to your mom. And, you know, I was like, well, I worry about my mom too, because I want her to feel better. And I know she just lost her friend and she's really sad. And Roger was like, well, write a letter to your mom and tell her how you, and wouldn't you know it? What do I do more than anything these days? I write. And yeah, that's why it was. And it's so crazy that like people think that like art and stuff is like some talent that you're born with, or no, it's a fucking coping mechanism. And right. we develop communication.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we develop these coping mechanisms when we're young, and then we just keep using them throughout life. And you have been smart enough to monetize yours. You know, I mean, like just the work that you talked about doing in the Dells and stuff, like that's insane. And to think that like all of that springs from a coping mechanism that you were given to deal with your parents' divorce when you were in grammar school, you know, right. I think it really should make us reexamine how we deal with kids with trauma, because if you can push them in the right direction, you can turn them into cash machines, you know, instead of letting them develop negative habits, which then, because think about like, you know, both of us were given art and it turned into something that followed with us through life and became a very positive thing. But imagine if you were given a negative coping mechanism, how much people lean on that. And that's why their lives kind of go in the trajectory that they do sometimes.
Right. Yeah. Go out in the back 40 and shoot some beer cans or something. You know, yeah, I hear that.
It's me.
No, I mean, yeah.
Except it's sex, but you know, you know, eventually you gotta accept how you cope, I suppose. I don't know.
I mean, it's
100%, you know, on that specific thing, but yeah, it had, you know, it helped me realize, hey, I there's different ways of dealing with what's going on in my head, you know. And then
right.
I have to go back to Jurassic Park. You know, first time I saw that, I'm like, I want to build those dinosaurs. You know, I wanted to make movies. And
that's
then
crazy.
Like,
well, I had a very similar experience with Jurassic Park, except I saw the dinosaurs and I said, I want to find that creature. So that's
I want to make one, right? And then put it in someone's yard and have them find it.
Have you ever thought about that, like special effects?
Yeah, deeply. That's how I got into theming. But I don't want to bust my butt for, you know, 2 or 3 years for a movie and then I'm out of a job, you know, that's waiting true. For the next movie to come up. And I'm living in California or wherever, you know, like just, you know, how that goes, hunting for the next job. Just want something secure and just do what I need to do. Like, even if art is something that's on the side, I'm still going to do it.
Right.
You know, like this whole conversation we've had is just going to happen. But if I'm, you know, my job is flipping burgers and it ends up paying me $100 an hour, I'm going to take it, you know,
right.
I'm going to make that the best burger you've ever seen. Cause that's how I am, you know, it's going to be wrapped all nice in origami and, you know, whatever. But,
cheese origami on the burgers. Yeah. No, I think that's smart. That's very logical, because that is, you know, one of the hardest things when you try to create a career out of artistic value is that there's really no, you don't typically, I mean, you can, but you don't typically get hired on. Usually they're a job by job basis and it's not very stable. It can be hard. And unless you really make it off of some really high paying, you know, contracted job right off the rip where you can like set back some money and you can budget that money really well. You know, that's why a lot of people don't pursue these things, is because it's hard and you have to kind of be your own boss and get your own jobs. And, you know, it's difficult. It's stressful. And all you're trying to do is do the one thing that you know and love. And so it's, definitely difficult. I mean, I see the struggle.
Yeah. When I went to film school, I had a friend that graduated with a bachelor's in screenwriting, and she went out to LA and became a script supervisor on Passions, and did that for a while, and then that show got canceled, and she was unemployed for a little bit, and then she got a job on Bones, and she did that for a while, and then that got canceled, and then she got married.
Yeah.
And Bones was, it was a particularly stressful experience for her, because, you know, those like Passions was different because that was a soap opera, so that filmed year round. And she went to work every day, like normal people do, where you just have a job and that's it. It's always, you always have a job. But for Bones, they would only work 6 months out of the year or something when they were filming the show. The show didn't film year round. So she would have work and then she would be off for a while. And then, I think there's some form of unemployment that those guys collect or something.
They qualify for regular unemployment, for federal unemployment.
So then she would kind of do that. But there was also a lot of hand-wringing because, like, Bones wasn't – I mean, it was a modest success, but it wasn't, like, one of those guaranteed returns every year.
Sure.
And it wasn't – I mean, it was kind of – I was like, but didn't you graduate with, like, a screenwriting degree? Like, and script supervisor basically, like, is on set with the script and, like, whatever scene they're doing today, and they're just making sure that everything in the script gets said or done and captured on film.
Right.
And so, which I guess you would need, you know, I really don't see why you would need a bachelor's degree in screenwriting to be able to do that, but whatever.
I think you really do need one, but it helps, you know.
You know, I just
a well-rounded individual is what you want to prove that you went to college. Is right.
Yeah.
Whereas my other buddy from film school, he dropped out, just drove to LA, was sleeping in his car for a couple weeks, editing music videos. Edited a video for Kiss, got to meet Gene Simmons, was Gene Simmons' personal videographer for like 3 months, and has so many crazy Kiss stories, and then ended up working as an editor on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, has been doing it this whole time. Yeah, I mean, he's Emmy nominated. He's the Susan Lucci of late night editing fucking awards, because he's been nominated but never won. And he's the only person I know from back in the day that made it, and he never finished school. He just said, fuck it, and went out there and, like, made connections, and he was a personable, likable guy, and just navigated through and hung out with Gene Simmons for fucking 6 months or whatever, and somehow just made it happen. So it's real, you know,
Fake it till you make it, right?
I think if you're looking for a structured path to success in that field, it doesn't exist. You know what I mean?
Right.
Some people get lucky. Some people don't. Some people finish school. Some people don't. I don't think there's any consistent pattern.
There's no, like, right or wrong way to go about doing it. But you know, speaking of, like, being laid off and stuff like that, I mean, I'll tell you guys, you know, I took the safe route and I was working for Victoria's Secret Corporate. A lot of people know this. I was laid off. There was nothing I could do. I never thought in a million years that was my safe job, right? I mean, I never thought this company would go under, and well, it did, you know? So, I mean, so then I started doing all this instead and just figured, fuck it, I'll figure it out along the way. And that's what I've been doing. I mean, sometimes that's kind of what it takes to, you know, chase your dreams a little bit. Of course, don't go homeless unless, I don't know, you like the nomadic life, but, you know, but it can happen in the real world as well as, you know, in this, you know, what we deem as a type of fantasy, you know, world. So I say go for it every time. That's kind of my thing about it, you know, just do it. Make sure you can eat, but, you know, at the same time, you know, you should just do it. Just do it. That's what Nike says, right? Can we say that? Are we going to get sued for saying that?
I know lawyers. If we do, I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
Drew, do you want to give all your social media stuff real quick so that people can know where to find you and buy your amazing products?
Yeah, it's drewschmidt.net. There's no www in front of it. If you do, it might not work for some reason. You can find me on Instagram at Walking Propaganda Image and Design. I thought that was a fun side hustle name because I make shirts, you know, you're walking and whatever.
I got a buddy.
And then, you know, on Facebook, you can hit me up on there, but, you know, all my links is on my website, drewschmidt.net.
Okay. And I will definitely, if you want to send those over, they're all in the description below. We'll post them all there and you guys can find Drew and, definitely, check out the Cryptid game, play it. I think people will like it. I'm excited. I want to know what people think. You guys tell me what you think about the Cryptid board game. And we'll also let Drew know what you think. So that's exciting stuff. All right. Well, definitely thank you for coming on. It was really exciting talking with you.
Great talking to you, Drew.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. This is fantastic.
It was fun. It's lots of fun. But until then, we'll see you guys next time.